Welcome back to another episode of the Talk 20s podcast. Are you a bit of a rebel, an activist, a protester, or simply someone who sees injustices that you wish you could challenge? Like every generation before us, many of us want to disrupt the status quo and make the world a better place. But how can we do that while still protecting our energy? Today's guest is author Brianna Pigado, who was named one of Scotland's 30 under 30 for her inspiring work as a social entrepreneur in the creative industries. But before we dive into this episode, please don't forget to hit that subscribe or follow button. Now let's get on with the show. In order to keep bringing you guys tons of free content, we work with brand partners who you'll hear from in this episode, including an advertisement from Zopa Bank. Brianna, we always kickstart the podcast by asking people to look back at this time last year and share a little picture with us. Okay. And a story about that picture, maybe something that no one's seen before. Like, give us a little bit of an insight to what you were doing 365 days ago.
Yeah. Go on. Well, a year ago, I have a picture of myself standing outside of the physiotherapy department at Glasgow Royal Infirmary.
Oh, no.
Because I was finally cleared to run after a really ridiculous injury, like a really silly injury.
Oh, yay. Not an oh no.
Yeah. And you know, when you do that thing where you think, okay, I'm just going to get back into something I love. I used to play five-a-side footy and yeah. I was playing with a league of people that were also getting back into five-a-side footy, thought everything was fine, went to the football pitch, did my stretches earlier in the day, did my warm-up, everything you're supposed to do. And after 5 minutes of being in, managed to slip. No one was touching me. I was not near the ball.
No.
And tore two ligaments in my ankle. So the whole process of this, it just felt like a bit of a silly setup, but I did physio for a little while, and there's a photo of me a year ago, finally getting cleared to start running
again. Go on, show us the photo. Let's have a little look.
It's a photo of me still masked up, but basically just looking very happy to be ready to go and coming out of physiotherapy. So
I love it when
here it is. Here
just,
it is.
Oh, yay.
So just a little cute. Oh,
it really is you by the physiotherapy sign. Yeah. Amazing. There we go. It's always difficult, I think, when you get to that age and you're older. Like when you were a kid, you just recovered so fast. Yeah. And then you get like older and you realize actually when you're ill, you should probably rest or take it easy. I think that's a hard thing to find out. And I know that just goes downhill from here. So it's not even
really
like,
does.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like nothing works. I feel like when you hit your 30s, things get really creaky. But you know, when you're in your 20s and you think it'll be fine,
yeah,
I'll spring up, it'll all be okay. And then you realize that actually your body does not love you in the way that it used
no.
to.
Yeah. It's quite depressing when you think about it, but I'm glad that you're okay now.
I am.
So tell us a little bit more about you. What do our listeners need to know about you? Because I just found out a really interesting fact about you literally before we turned the cameras on. So tell us a little bit more and about what you just spilled behind camera as well.
Well, I'm a bit of an enigma in some ways, but I've been working in the creative industries for my entire adult life. I'm an American that's been in Scotland for that entire time. And I love wild swimming. I love astrology. I love tarot. Mm-hmm. And the little thing I told you about when we were getting started earlier is that I grew up in Washington, D.C., and my mom was in politics. Mm-hmm. So she worked for Bill Clinton. Mm-hmm. And I think all of these really random bits of my life have just led to me being a person that absolutely is up for anything, mm-hmm. but definitely is used to a little bit of intrigue too.
Mm-hmm. And obviously growing up in a household that was obviously very informed in politics, kind of in that world, do you think that had a huge impact on you?
It did, because there was never a moment in my life where someone wasn't over speaking a different language, telling a wild story, traveled to a far-flung part of the world. And I think because of that, I grew up in a household and in an environment where I'm always really interested in people's stories, what they've done with their lives, the things about them that you'd maybe never find out. And I think it's had a massive impact on where I am today.
Mm-hmm. Politics also has that reputation though for, you know, people coming from different perspectives, different sides, having disagreements. Did you see a lot of that growing up within your household? Like, fighting the opposition?
Yeah, I think I did. Definitely between my parents, and we're going to come on to this later, but I think that's what shaped me into being a little bit of a troublemaker mm-hmm. and a little bit of a disruptor. So there's a part of me that loves to be the diplomat and keep the peace, mm-hmm. but I was definitely that kid at school that was always asking the annoying question, why are we doing that? Mm-hmm. I don't want to do it. And I think that a big part of this as well has been growing up in that environment, people really willing to speak their minds and like argue their corner led me into my very first job, which was being involved in student politics. The one thing I said I wouldn't do. So yeah, I think it's had a huge impact.
So that first job that you had straight out of university, mm-hmm. I remember being, when I was at university, looking up to the people who were like in charge of like, it was called the Guild of Students where I went, mm-hmm. Or Students Union, and it being such a big thing. It was literally like running for president
yes.
at university. You were like the yeah. campus celebrity. Like yep. it was like, you know, what was that whole experience like? Because yeah. I think at one stage I probably thought, oh, maybe I'll do that. I didn't end up doing it. But like, hats off to anyone that did. Like, it's 100%. A huge undertaking. Tell us more about that time.
You know, I think what I didn't realize when I got involved in student politics is literally, it's just like a little mini version of national politics. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget going along to like a student council event in my first year. And part of it was my mom going, oh, you should go along to that and see what you think. But I got really into it because I was at uni at a time where there are loads of international students, there are lots of things happening in politics around people being able to stay in the UK. Mm-hmm. But I think what shocked me the most when I really got into it and decided to run for a sabbatical officer position was that, yeah, people had campaign managers, they had people that were doing their marketing.
Yeah.
We were talking about like strategies for door knocking and getting posters out. And back to what you said about running for president, maybe it was a Freudian slip, but my posters didn't say, you know, vote Brianna Pigato for president of Edinburgh Uni Students Association. It said Brianna for president. So there are all these photos of me looking really serious going around. But honestly, it was one of the best things that I could do because it goes back to that whole fundamental question you might have for yourself sometimes of like, can I do this? Mm-hmm. And I think just having the self-belief, I remember speaking to people and they were like, what are you going to do after uni? And I wasn't even thinking about it because I was focused on that one thing. So mm-hmm. I remember sitting in someone's living room one day and they're like, so what are your plans? And I'm like, what do you mean? Like, I'm running for president. And you have to put everything into it. Sleepless nights, strategy talks, but it was so much fun. You met an incredible amount of people. And I think my campaign was really innovative because we really use social media. We had people do Vox Pop interviews, share stories. We had t-shirts, we had posters. We did everything in a really creative way, like pop-up events, dances. And that was the first time I think that people were really utilizing it in that way. Mm-hmm. And I think it kind of knocked people's socks off. They weren't expecting it.
Mm-hmm. So spoiler alert, but you got the job.
Yeah, I got the job.
You got the job. What was it the reality like? Like, are you actually like president? Are you actually in charge of things? Can you make decisions? Like, what's the reality?
So as a 21-year-old, I walked in on my first day not realizing that I had just inherited an organization with a £10 million turnover, 150 staff. I was managing, technically, mm-hmm. he might not have liked it, a chief exec who was the manager of the business, twice my age. And not only are you balancing kind of student issues and politics, you're working with MPs, you're working with city councillors, but this was a huge commercial enterprise, £10 million turnover. We had like 13 bars, 4 venues, mm-hmm. club nights. And I think it was really getting chucked into the deep end in terms of running a business where from the outside, you just think, yeah, this will be fun. I'm going to do something that I believe in. And you get into this and you're like, wait a minute, you know, I'm 21 and you're giving me all this power and responsibility. So it was wild. It was a really trial by fire and I loved it.
Yeah. And are there any moments that you kind of really stick in your mind from that time?
Yes, there are. And I'm thinking about what I can share.
A quick note from our sponsors, Zopa Bank, who are here to help you with your personal finance in the Zopa app. Zopa have a For You section on their app that gives you helpful, personalized insights like reviewing your subscriptions, checking for cheaper broadband and energy bills. The first thing that you need to do is link your accounts using Open Banking. Once your accounts are connected, the available data will let Zopa understand your finances and give you personalized insights. It will also analyze your credit file and check your Zopa eligibility. Best of all, it's all free and at your fingertips always. So you can make sure you're making the best, most informed choice with your money 24/7. Download the Zopa app now to find out more.
I mean, we had a lot of controversial moments that in that time. Blurred Lines by Robin Thicke came out, and our union had banned it the year before.
When I was a union, that happened. Yeah.
So that was our union. We had a lot of controversy with political figures coming to speak and people protesting them. The other massive thing that was huge, was really behind the scenes, is that we were in a £250,000 deficit as well. Mm. So there were a lot of things about that time where I would come home at the end of the day and think, like, either I'm not cut out for this or I didn't sign up for it. But it was incredible, because you got an experience to meet people you would never meet. I met the Crown Prince of Monaco, who was visiting one time. So it was just a job that was wild, but it was incredible.
And with that kind of deficit and stuff, did you feel like the responsibility to kind of turn it back into a profit?
Yes, but thankfully there was a team of people who were actually kind of managing that. But yeah, you know, my name was on Company's House. My name was on the accounts. Like, things were getting signed off, and it was 100% my responsibility from that perspective. But I think it felt a little bit like false advertising, because you got into this role that you were elected into. Mm-hmm. And it's like, by the way, here's a massive business that you're going to be responsible for as well. But ultimately, it was an incredible, incredible learning experience. I just think when you're that visible and you're someone, you talked about, you know, being a big name on campus. I think I just spent my weekends indoors, because, you know, you're out for a party or out for a drink and someone wants to ask you a favor and you're like, actually, I'm all right. I'm not on the clock right now.
Canon doesn't ever end in that kind of way. What would you want to tell someone who is going to do a job like that, like throw themselves into like student politics, take on like president of a student's union? Like, do you have any advice?
Honestly, it's the best thing that you can ever do, and it will set you up in terms of really understanding how to run a business, how to put yourself out there, how to public speak, how to hold yourself, how to be responsible for thousands of people that are counting on you. But also, I would say, just like, take it with a pinch of salt and have fun, because I think I took myself a bit too seriously. Mm-hmm. It was the right thing to do at the time, but I look back and I'm like, wasn't that deep?
Yeah. Don't we all look back and think, though, it wasn't that deep? I feel like we all get into like jobs, especially like young, and we take it dead serious. Like, oh, this has to be the be all and end all, and I have to do it perfect. And I definitely have moments where I'm like, oh my God, I took myself way too serious. That's embarrassing. Like, I agree. Like, it's, I think a lot of people listening to this, like, it's okay to take a breather and like not take yourself so seriously. 100%. People must have thought, who is that girl? To me, not to you.
To me as well, I'm sure.
But you're now a published author, or you're about to be. I've actually got a sneaky advanced copy of this book. Yay. So I've been able to have a little read of it beforehand. And so your journey like began with that, but like you've really moved about and done lots of different things within the creative industries, and kind of improving the area in Scotland, really, because that's really where you're based. You know, Scotland 30 under 30. Yeah. So your career has really taken you in so many different paths since then. And it's kind of all summed up in this book, really, from reading it. Because you talk a lot about, it's called Make Good Trouble, a practical guide to the energetics of disruption.
Yeah.
Why did you want to write a book on disruption?
I wanted to write a book on disruption because at every stage in my life, ever since I was little, I've been a disruptive force in the environment, community, workplace, group of friends I've been in. And as I was starting to say earlier, I was that little kid at school that was like, oh, it's nap time. I was like, I don't want a nap. Why are we doing that now? And I think there's something so special about the time that we're living in now, where we have access to all of this information. We really have the opportunity to make our lives whatever we want them to be. And I know that not everyone's kind of starting off in the same kind of starting point, but actually I think being a disruptor and kind of is so crucial to understand as a skill set, as a tool, as something we can cultivate that we have power over. We're not powerless. Mm-hmm. And I think for a long time in my life, I was being disruptive in spaces and situations, and I didn't really realize it. I was just doing me. You know, when I was elected president of the Students' Union, I was the first Black woman in that role in 150 years. And it was because I just thought, yeah, I'm going to try it. I'm going to go for it. No one told me I couldn't. But I think cultivating this kind of vibe, energy, this embracing disruption, it doesn't have to be chaos. It doesn't have to be negative. It can be something that really is transformational.
Mm-hmm. So in your words, what would you describe as a disruptor? Like, what does it mean to be a disruptor?
I know we overuse this phrase a lot mm-hmm. about living our truth and speaking our truth. And I think it's a little bit more complicated than that. But I would say a disruptor is someone who lives by their values and is not afraid to shake things up mm-hmm. and is also not afraid to disrupt themselves. So this whole idea of really being open to change, being curious and asking ourselves, actually, what is my belief around this? Like, does this still hold up? Is this still something I subscribe to? Or what is my belief about myself and the people around me? And just kind of leading with curiosity and going, actually, I'm okay to shift that. I'm okay to disrupt that. And disruption can be anything from an activist to someone who, you know, is living at home in their hometown and is making little changes in their lives that mm-hmm. are small but significant that no one sees. So it doesn't have to be loud. Mm-hmm. It's just about being someone who embraces change.
Being someone who embraces change, I think that's a really good way of like summing up. And I think lots of our generation would probably mm-hmm. say that we are. Do you think we're living in an age of disruption?
Yes, I think we're living in one of the biggest ages of disruption. And I know that any generation you'll speak to will say their time was disruptive
exactly,
or they lived
yeah.
through disruption mm-hmm. or there's a lot going on in the world. But I think we're living in a time where we're really questioning the structures, the institutions, the status quo, like mm-hmm. how things are. Because I think we've lived in a tumultuous time, but we've also lived in a time that's been a time of abundance and opportunity and information and people really kind of questioning things and following their dreams. But yeah, we've got a lot of things going on in the world, the climate crisis, financial crashes that happened years ago, and this kind of growth in artificial intelligence and data and VR, virtual reality and augmented reality. So there's a lot happening right now that never existed before. Mm-hmm.
In my view, I think the biggest shakeup of the world undoubtedly was the COVID pandemic. I think that literally turned everything upside down because we literally didn't do anything normally.
Yeah.
Like not one thing was normal about that time. And I think that probably set off a really big, it was a great big catalyst for so many things that just never returned really back to that normality and how it was. Do you see that in kind of in the circles that you're in? Do you see that like lots of people are kind of have embraced that change and changed, you know, their outlooks or what they do for work or how they view the world? Like, are you seeing that?
Massively. And I think during the pandemic, there are a lot of kind of experts, philosophers, economists, people out there that were trying to predict what would happen
yeah.
through the pandemic. But there was this whole notion of the great change or the great decision and great turning. And yeah, we know people left their jobs, moved, decided to get pets, you know, or decided to...
That was me.
Me too.
Yeah.
A little later. But yeah, decided to make these big changes in their lives. And I think we're still living in the kind of aftermath of the pandemic.
Yeah.
I think we don't really actually know the impact it's had on us yet. Mm-hmm. I think maybe in 10 years' time, we'll be able to look back in history and go, yeah, that was, of course, a significant moment, but this is what it's done to society. We're seeing some of it now, obviously. Mm-hmm. But it was massive. And I think for some people, it was devastating, obviously. Mm, and for others, it opened up these real questions of taking this pause to go, is this what I want to be doing with myself? Mm-hmm. Like, am I happy with my life? Mm-hmm. What are the things I've always wanted to try?
Mm-hmm. I think for our audience, like many people will agree that they want to embrace change and they want to kind of, they see something that they don't think is quite right and they want to be able to speak up about it. But I think the act of speaking up can sometimes be quite challenging because especially if you're up against with, you know, people who you know just probably won't see your view, maybe a different generation,
yeah.
maybe just things that are so concrete and have always been that way, so can't change.
Yeah.
People will feel afraid to speak up. From your experience and, you know, sharing, I know you've got a few tips in the book, how can we feel more confident to speak up and be like, actually, I don't think we should do it this way?
Yeah, it's such a good question. And I think I've been in so many situations in my life where I have spoken up and I don't regret any of it, but I look back on it and I was like, what was the cost? Like,
yeah.
was it actually worth it?
Yeah, true.
And I think sometimes, and I get into this in the book, as you said, there's some tips there. I think we have to go back to that core question of like, will it matter in 2 days? Will it matter in 5 years' time? And, you know, you don't have to speak up in that moment. It's actually about this kind of fundamental question of what are my values, what's important to me and the people around me, and how can I prepare myself for speaking up or for change? Because I think the only thing certain in life is change. Mm-hmm. And there's a real question there of, are we going to bring that about or let it happen to us? It's kind of like that quote of being thrust into a position of power. You know, some people step into it, and then for some people, they're thrust into it. And my tip to people is really, you know, make changes in your kind of circle of comfort. And when you feel like you've got a good kind of network that's supporting you, you know what's important to you, you can take bigger baby steps. You don't have to do it all at once. Mm-hmm.
Do you think as women, we struggle more to be disruptors?
Yes, mm-hmm. I think we definitely do. And whether or not it's because of the way we were socialized, what we were told, you know, to be quiet or to wait, or what we were told it means to be a girl or to be a woman, that's definitely a massive thing I think we can struggle with. Imposter syndrome, our confidence. But we also know that there's so much that's happened over the decades and more recently around stepping into our power and owning that. Mm-hmm. And I've spent a lot of time over the years working with young women in charity, people that have experienced gender-based violence, people, young women in leadership roles. And I think a lot of this is about coming together and supporting each other in community, but knowing that things won't change until we disrupt them. And even if we just disrupt things by speaking up in our little corner of the world, that will ripple out and mm-hmm. impact things more widely as we push against kind of maybe more embedded things, as you said. You know, like, I think we can really struggle with things being traditionally the way that they are, but it's taken one voice or one person to make a big difference and to change things mm-hmm. drastically. Mm-hmm.
As we record this, we're not, you know, too far away from International Women's Day. Mm. And I think, you know, and personally, what's your view on International Women's Day? I have my own opinions on it, but like, are you for it? Are you against it? Like, do you think it's beneficial? Like,
look, I think International Women's Day probably needs to be every day. It's something we need to do all the time. But I think there's nothing wrong with celebrating things mm-hmm. and kind of pulling attention to things. But I don't think that should be the only focus. Mm-hmm. I don't think that should be the only day that we're talking about things like mm-hmm. that or making change. But yes, I know people have a lot of opinions about whether or not it should exist. And I think it should be there.
Mm-hmm. My view on it is I hate when it's used as a way to market us to buy more things.
Horrible.
I don't need to buy more things on International Women's Day.
Nope.
If you're using it as a platform to celebrate, you know, the women in your organization, you know, empower people, great, all for it. But I think too many companies, how many times do I go into my emails and it's like 20% off for International Women's Day?
100%. Not helpful. 100%.
That's not helping. That's not solving the situation. Mm-hmm. That is making your pockets bigger. Most of you guys at the top are men, so it doesn't really help anything.
It doesn't.
So that, I think that's my kind of view on it, when it's used as a marketing ploy. But if it is genuinely used for good, I think it's a really great reminder, like every single year, to that we need to make sure that we are giving women opportunity within the within business and within organizations, within companies, and that we are hearing their voices and allowing them to have that platform. Yeah. So I think it acts as a gentle reminder, but when it's used in that kind of way, I'm like, no, I don't agree.
I think anything used as a marketing ploy to sell us things we don't need, we don't need to have that. Yeah. So I completely agree on when it's being used as an excuse. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something else we can push back on a little bit more. Yeah. It's like, well, maybe on International Women's Day, you boycott and don't buy anything. And you just spend time with the people you love and care about and mm-hmm. want to platform.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So one of the things then, and I guess this kind of does tie into all the discussions that we've been having, is how do we become good leaders? Because I think ultimately to be a disruptor, a lot of disruptors are leaders. And also leaders have to then deal like or manage people who might be working under them that are little mini disruptors.
Yeah.
So in either way, like we need to have good leadership in order to have good disruptors. You've been a leader of, like you said, a £10 million organization when you were president and many other jobs and since. What's your experience? Like, how can we practice good leadership? What should we be doing ourselves as leaders? And what should we be looking out for in our managers as good leaders?
Great question, because I have had a slew of terrible managers in my time. I think many of us have had those stories. And I think a really good leader supports and cultivates other leaders. I think there is a need as a leader to kind of lead from a perspective of kind of curiosity, of openness. Yes, obviously you've got a business you're running, or you've got a product you're selling, or you've got an organization that you're trying to support, or a cause that you're working towards. But I think, you know, you should actually pull those kind of disruptors in a bit closer and listen to them and let yourself be challenged. And I think creating a space for challenge, but with respect, mm-hmm. with kind of a kind of collective goal or focus, is a really important and brilliant thing to do. And I think we're moving away from an era of leaders who are trying to show strength and show certainty mm-hmm. and kind of lead from the front. And I think it's actually about, like, how do we collectively cultivate other leaders? I think the best mark of a good leader is someone who can support and cultivate other leaders that mm-hmm. go on to do other things. And anytime I've worked in a company or organization that's had good leadership, it's because leaders haven't been threatened by the people that are around them.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that's something you can learn? Like, do you think that's something you can get better at? Or do you think we just haven't people who are naturally good leaders? Like, how do we genuinely become a good leader?
It's such a good question. I think that there are different types of leaders. I think everyone has leadership potential. Mm-hmm. And I think it's something we can definitely learn. Yes, some people are maybe more naturally confident or public speakers or good at supporting people and organizing people. But actually, I think good leadership skills are something that we can learn with a bit of self-reflection. Because I think where leaders go wrong is where they are completely blinded by their own ideas and just want to kind of charge ahead. And actually, good leadership is someone whose ideas can be up under scrutiny and mm-hmm. who can be challenged and who can collaborate and share. And I do think it's something we can cultivate. But remember that our leadership doesn't need to look like anyone else's. You are so important and unique in your own leadership, and cultivating the skills that you have and the ideas that you have can lead you to be a wonderful leader. I think mm-hmm. it's about having humility.
Thanks for listening to the Talk 20s podcast. If you're still listening, here's a little reminder about our pay partner, BetterHelp. We know that your 20s can sometimes be tough and it's hard to find good therapists to talk to. If this is something you're struggling with too, why not check out BetterHelp? As a thank you for listening, we have a special link that gets you 10% off your first month. Click the link in the description or visit betterhelp.com/talk20s.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Well, there's tons of like amazing knowledge in this book, and we'll get you to share a little bit more about it. But we always ask our guests to talk a little bit through some fun questions.
Yes, like, ready.
We love talking about our biggest adulting failures. We all have them. Everyone loves to spin them into a positive on the podcast quite often. And quite often they do, you know, if you hadn't have had that great big failure, maybe you wouldn't have ended up doing X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
But is there anything that you remember from, you know, throughout your 20s that you thought, that was a big boo-boo, I really regret doing that?
Yeah. It was 2017. I was running the arts festival, the social enterprise mm-hmm. I set up. And we were about to go into our third year. We'd basically had all the marketing, all the artists. We were expecting 7,000 people to come that year. 500 artists across 15 venues in the city. It was the biggest festival we'd ever done. And some of our investors were the local unis mm-hmm. and the city council. I made the big mistake of thinking one of our investors was just happy to kind of go in for a third year. And I checked in with them about 3 months before the festival started. And there was someone new in that senior role at the uni, and they knew nothing about it. So they were like, what are you on about? And I was sitting there thinking, what do you mean? Like, has this not been passed on? This was my understanding. Yeah. They were like, nope, unless you have something in writing, absolutely, we're not supporting this year. And our biggest kind of group of artists was from their university. So again, it felt like a no-brainer. I just sit with the team and go, are we going to go ahead with this? Like, what are we going to do? And we decided that we would just go ahead and try and recover the money. Mm. And we just managed to scrape by.
Right.
But I remember that whole conversation and that whole decision to go ahead with the festival was, it felt like a massive failure to me. And honestly, it pushed me into massive burnout. Mm. So I don't regret it. And I have this moment of kind of this learning of, well, make sure people are on board, make sure you've got everything agreed, make sure you check ahead of time. Mm-hmm. But I have this disastrous week, which is in my book in 2017, where everything felt like it was falling apart. And it was started with this whole kind of decision around mm-hmm. the festival. So yeah, it was rough. And I remember sitting on my sofa one day thinking, like, how am I gonna mm-hmm. cope with this. Like, what am I going to do?
If you had that time again, what would you have done?
I think if I had that time again, I would probably have done the same thing. But what I would have done differently is kind of taken a step back and gone, look, maybe we can scale things down, make them smaller. Mm-hmm. What got me through that was teamwork and kind of people really believing in what we were doing. But the biggest mistake, biggest boo-boo was, make sure the investor was giving you the money and make sure it was going ahead.
Yeah.
So I learned from that massively.
I mean, obviously we did 20s Fest back in October 2023. Mm-hmm. And I know how hard it is to run a festival.
Horrible.
It's tough. Like, I'm still recovering now with six months on. Like, it was exhausting. And we did that in like 90 days. Like, we really went for it. And it was an amazing experience. You know, we had such brilliant feedback from, you know, attendees, speakers, brands that we partnered with. Yeah. It's very hard to build a festival. Like, the benefits that you get out of it are great for everyone, but the actual organizer, I think it's so hard.
It is.
Because you don't really see a win. Like, I'll quite comfortably say we made loss on it.
Yeah.
And that's just something that we kind of knew was going to be the case, but we loved doing it and we found it beneficial, but like going at it for a second time round, like we've got so many people who are excited to get on board, but we need to have our ducks in a row, much like you, what you're saying, like, is our biggest investor ready to go? And it's quite normal actually in the events world. I've come from events background, that in year one you make some sort of a loss, in year two you pretty much break even, and in year three that's when you start kind of making the cost back up.
Exactly.
But like, that's tough going for small businesses, for small enterprises that are really trying to make a difference and stuff like that. Like, sometimes you can't afford to do that. I mean, I feel you on the festival organizer perspective.
There's always that joke that it takes a year to recover, right?
Yeah.
It takes you as long as it does almost to organize it to recover from it 100%.
A lot. Any tips and tricks for us going into maybe a second year? Would you want to give us any words of wisdom or advice?
Yeah.
Other than don't do it.
Say always do it. Start as early as you can.
Yeah.
And I think that there's such an art to kind of curating and running festivals. You know, I live in the festival city. It's Edinburgh. We have the Fringe every summer. Yeah. They just announced some of the Fringe program today that's coming up, you know, in August. Mm-hmm. And my best advice is, you've got a vision for what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You're getting people on board by pitching it to them, telling them about them, getting people together in this kind of live space to share ideas. And I believe that you'll succeed, but it's definitely about giving yourself enough time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Not 90 days like us. Psychopaths over here.
Incredible.
So what we love to do on talk about on the podcast is the idea that no one sat on the sofa is the finished package. Yeah. Like, we are big believers in that, like, nobody's perfect. Everybody's working through something. You do not know what is going on in somebody else's life. Sure. We love to like tap into our guests and be like, come on, let's have a bit of realness. Like, what is going on in your life right now that you're like, I wish I could do better at that?
100%. I have always been an overworker, overachiever, and I flip that and see that as a person that loves to have so many projects on the go.
Yeah.
I almost never say no to things.
Yeah.
Always want to try something new. I've got creative projects going on. But recently I got to a point where I started to realize the amount that I was kind of overscheduling and overbooking myself felt like it might not just be my personality and a personality quirk. And I finally started to go through an assessment for ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been going through this whole kind of assessment process. So many women get diagnosed late in their 30s and 40s. Mm-hmm. The symptoms of ADHD, when scientists were first and psychologists and psychiatrists were first kind of understanding this, were all based on young boys and their symptoms and how they present. And everyone loves to be a little neurospicy. I'm completely, completely in kind of favor of that. But I think it's gotten to a point where actually I don't just have to muddle through and do things that have worked for me up until this point. It's gotten to a point where it's like, okay, how can I live a life that's less stressful and more organized? And how can I embrace the fact that it's not just being busy or overscheduled, but it might actually be something that's fundamentally part of my mental health and who I am.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm getting an ADHD assessment, and who knows what that might look like in future. It might be an ADHD coach, but I'm really looking forward to things being less chaotic in a really nice way. And as we say in ADHD world, you know, the whole idea of time optimism, you think you have loads of time to do things or things take you much longer than they should.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all for that just being something that I embrace, but I'm really happy to actually get some support for it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I don't know if you know this, but I got my ADHD diagnosis.
I didn't.
Yeah, I got my ADHD diagnosis in June last year.
How was it?
So, yeah, I kind of think everything you're saying there was just like, yeah, that was kind of me beforehand as well. Like very, very similar. And I don't actually, you probably don't know that about me because I don't actually shout about it because I feel like right now there's this really weird trend that people are saying that ADHD is a trend and it's absolutely not. And I don't want to subscribe to any of that. So I'm not going to be like, oh, ADHD this and ADHD that. It's just part of who I am.
Exactly.
My friends and family know, like I've been able to understand myself so much more, but it's not something that I'm going to like blast all over the internet and make part of like, you know, like my brand and stuff.
Yeah.
But it is part of who I am. Yeah. And it's helped me understand my brain so much. Like that just, my life has got so much better since I got that.
Yeah.
Because for so long, I kind of felt like I just, you know, thought like, I just knew I was like different or thought differently to a lot of people. And like that busyness, I can so relate to that. Yes. The time optimism, there's just so many different elements. And now that I know that about my brain, I can just be so much more in-tuned.
Yeah,
and forgiving. So yeah. I really hope that that is helpful for you and gives you kind of all the support that you need because, yeah, it definitely changed my world for the better.
That's so amazing. Yeah. I'm really excited about it, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us a little bit more about this book then because tell us when it's out. Tell us everything that you want our listeners to know about it. So make good trouble.
Yeah, the book is out on the 9th of April, available for pre-order now. And this book is for anyone that's a little curious about how you can channel chaos into something that works for you, how you can speak up for yourself, how you can transform your relationships, how you can transform your life. And there's a little bit in there, if you're into astrology or tarot, there's a little bit in the book that gets into a little bit of the woo-woo side of things. Mm-hmm. So if you ever wanted to try anything out, there are lots of exercises and tips in it. Mm-hmm. But honestly, this book is a labor of love. It's a story of me, and I really hope it helps other people really step into their confidence or just explore something they might not have ever thought about before.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, we always end the podcast by asking our guests the same question that we ask everyone that comes on the podcast. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. So we always ask our guests what one piece of advice they would give to their 20-year-old selves. If you could look back and Brianna, 20-year-old Brianna was looking at you right in the face, what would you want to say to her? You can only say one thing.
I'd say, Brianna, again, but more fun.
Again, but more fun. In what way?
I did everything. I had so many ambitions. I wanted to be a creative director. And honestly, I don't regret a single thing that I did, but I think I took myself so seriously, that came up earlier, that I didn't always enjoy the ride. And honestly, I think that's the biggest thing for me. I love what I do. I'm passionate about my work, but I think it took me a long time to realize work never, it doesn't love you back. And I was that kind of 20-year-old working an 80-hour work week, running my own business, doing all this freelance work. And honestly, it took me a while to realize that. So again, but fun.
Love it. I absolutely love it. Well, thank you so much
for
coming on the podcast. We have loved chatting to you. So excited to dive into more of this book and for our listeners to read it as well. I have to say a huge thank you to our drink sponsors, Riviera, Peach Iced Tea. So delicious. So yummy. And thank you so much, Brianna, for your time. It's been amazing to have you on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Gabby. Woo.